Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Helen Phillips transfixed readers with The Need, a nightmarish exploration of motherhood that was long listed for the National Book Award. Her new novel, Hum, is a work of speculative fiction that explores marriage, motherhood, and selfhood. Hum opens as May, a wife and mother who lost her job to AI, undergoes an invasive experiment that alters her face so she cannot be recognized by surveillance in a desperate bid to resolve her family's debts. From there, we follow May and her family as they take on an expensive respite in their city's botanical garden, the only green refuge left. But what looks to be brimming with nature and lush greens is not what it seems, and May will have to place her trust in a hum, the intelligent robots populating the city to hold on to her family. Hum explores a world compromised by global warming and technological advancement, a world of both dystopian and utopian possibilities. It is a great pleasure to welcome Helen Phillips to this week's book show. Helen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It is an honor to be here, truly.
This book just wowed me. I read it first in February, March, and have just had it with me in my brain for a long time. And now it's finally out. And it's a book that really stuck with me. I'm curious as to what brought you to a dystopian place, and yet a place that I think most of us can identify with.
Yes, the seed of the book very much lies in the world as it is. Some years ago, I was walking home from work and the thought crossed my mind, oh, I need to buy new dish rags. And I got home and opened my computer and dish rags were immediately advertised to me. And I was shocked. I couldn't figure out how the advertisers had known what I was privately thinking on my walk home from work. Now, maybe that kind of surveillance to sell me dish rags doesn't really matter, but it made me feel creeped out. And that was a real seed for the book. What if that kind of surveillance was taken to a true extreme that could actually be really harmful to a person? And so it definitely seeds from our world, very much so.
So I want to just ask you about that example, but let me first set the record, or have you set the record, as to what a hum is. I very simply said in the introduction that these are robots that are populating the city, intelligent robots. But give us a sense of how you define a hum.
So the hums are the super intelligent robots. They are embodied, so they have physical form. They're 4'11", so they're designed to be a little unthreatening in their size. They look, as May describes them early in the book, almost like sculptures, the first time she sees one, she mistakes it for a sculpture. And their name, Hum, captures a lot about what they are in the book. Hum is both the low buzz of the technology that's always surrounding us. It's a negative thing, maybe a sound we can't escape from, but hum is also a beautiful word that calls to mind someone humming to their child or the sacred sound of Om. So the hums really bear that duality, both of the sinister and the sacred almost.
So as far as your dish rag example, this is something that as May is interacting with the hums in her life, that often just in regular conversation, as a question is being asked, that all of a sudden a sales pitch comes from the hum. May most of the time just says no thank you, and that's really the creepy part, because again, back to what I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, that just doesn't seem all that far from where we are right now.
Yes, we're constantly being advertised to. And I use that in part to infuse some humor into the book. It's just funny when you're having what seems like a regular conversation with someone, and then suddenly you realize that they're trying to sell you on something. So for me, some of the moments that made me laugh as I was writing are those moments. But also, there is a much more sinister element there, that as we move throughout the world and throughout the internet, we are being surveilled as consumers and advertised to as consumers. late in the book, May pays a significant sum of money to interact with the hum when it isn't in its advertising mode. And when the hum is not beholden to advertising, it becomes capable of a very different level and depth of conversation.
Talk a little bit about the family dynamics, because May has done this extraordinary thing to try to get the family out of debt. The husband is very concerned about the finances of the family and what May is spending the money on. Obviously, children are children and want what they want, which certainly makes sense. But to take this extraordinary, and this is really what starts off the book, is the surgery, the alteration. But to take that step, this, I would assume, has to be a fairly dire situation to go that route.
Yes, May has lost her job, as you said at the beginning, to artificial intelligence. Jem does gig work through an app. So they don't have the middle class stability that they had when May had her job. So she does it for money. Also, she is told that this alteration to her face will be very subtle. So she takes comfort in that. She's doing this alteration. There are 68 points on your face that enable surveillance to recognize you. It uses these 68 points. And the doctor who's doing it says, we'll just alter them a little bit. And so she's taking comfort in, you know, she's going to make this money. It will be a subtle alteration. However, as her children quickly inform her, a subtle alteration can be pretty creepy unto itself. So she does end up having complicated feelings about the decision she made.
Because of the reaction from the family, this lands with a thud, really, in the family as she goes in. Obviously, you can't see yourself unless you're looking in a mirror, but realizing that you're wearing a face that you in your brain don't really know.
Yes, it's a very unsettling sensation. In my book, The Need, there is also a theme of doppelgangers, of someone who is like you but not quite like you. So apparently I have a little obsession with that idea.
There is also this idea of there's some camouflaging in the sense of gauze and trying to hide it a little bit. But the idea of once the face is altered, the party that alters it gets what out of that? How do they then use her face?
Well, they are doing an experiment to find out how long it takes for facial recognition systems to identify a face after it has been through that kind of change. So there's something called adversarial tech, and John Seabrook wrote an incredible article in The New Yorker about this that I read when I was working on the book. But the idea is that there are certain ways that you can modify your face so that you won't be recognized by surveillance if that's something that you want to avoid. But as the surveillance system receives the data of your new face, it trains itself to then recognize it. So you can't escape it, even if you try.
We are talking to Helen Phillips. The name of the new novel is Hum. It is out from Simon and Schuster. In writing the story, while we're talking about the technological aspects of it, it's so much a family story. It's so much about the family dynamics of a mother, a father, and two children, and just trying to make that work. And man, that's hard enough, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm so glad you've pointed that out, because though there's a lot to talk about with the book in terms of technology and the futuristic aspects, I really feel that it is such a human story. It's really a story of May striving to connect in a meaningful way with her family, with her children, with herself, with nature, and stumbling a lot along the way. But it is really about trying to keep your family together amid the challenges.
Let us talk for a moment about some of the technology which fits into that family dynamic. But one is the bunny. These are basically devices for children. I mean, what's cuter than a bunny, right? But these are these are a cell phone like, very much a something that is interacting with the child in a way that can both be positive and perhaps mostly negative.
Yes. So the bunnies are these almost permanent fixtures. They're not literally permanent, but children in this world wear them all the time, like wristwatches, and they can use them to do their homework, and they can use them. At one point, May's daughter Lou is telling her bunny about something difficult that happened that day at school, some incident of bullying. And May really wants her daughter to talk to her, but instead her daughter is talking to the bunny. And I named them bunnies because it's a very innocuous term, and I feel like a lot of our technology has a name that makes it sound innocuous, like, do you want to accept cookies? We get asked a lot in our internet travels. We're pretty wired to say yes when someone offers us a cookie. Same thing, would you like a bunny? And Sherry Turkle, in her book Reclaiming Conversation, writes about these terms we use for technology in a really powerful way. But yes, May is in competition with the bunnies for her children's attention.
It reminded me of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters, where that's sort of the image that you conjure to try to be the most innocuous thing you can think of that's going to be the monster that takes out the city.
Yeah, he's terrifying, right? Even though he's a marshmallow.
That's right. You also bring us another term, womb, spelled WOOM, as in room. How did you come upon that idea of this space that people occupy and refer to as a womb?
So the wombs are these sort of human-sized egg-like containers that you can enter. You have them in your home, in your bedroom. You pull down the shade and you can lie back there, rest back there, and have access to the internet. And the children have them, the parents have them. They are subsidized by the advertising agencies because advertising does occur in the wombs. But in May's family, the womb is often a place of relaxation and peace. I don't know that it's the deepest kind of relaxation and peace because it's interrupted every so often by advertisements, but it is a place of retreat from the life of the family. And though we don't yet have wombs, and I don't recommend that we have them, I do think that there is a tendency now for us to retreat into our technologies apart from one another, probably more than we should, and using that as an escape from actual conversation.
The idea of the botanical garden and this being something that is very important to May, for the children, I guess even for herself, to bring them to this experience. There is concern among Jem and May of being able to afford this, even with the money that they've gotten from the surgery. However, I'm curious as to what it was about a botanical garden that was such a focal point for the children and for this family of what they wanted to explore.
Yes, that image of a lush and healthy green space in the middle of a city was one of the original images of the book. I knew that I wanted to write about that. And I think that's partly because as a current city dweller and Brooklynite, those spaces like Prospect Park or Greenwood Cemetery are really incredible to come upon in the city. But May is just so eager for her children to be able to experience the world as she experienced it as a child. She grew up in the Rocky Mountains, but her childhood home burned in a fire, as many acres are burning right now in the West. And she is really desperately trying to expose her children to that feeling of nature, even though it comes at an extremely high cost.
When it comes to the high cost, Once they go to the botanical garden, it's not long before it's realized that this isn't as advertised for this particular family. But the aforementioned bunnies, they're left at home. There's an idea that while you are communicating with nature, we are going to get away from the technology.
Yes, she has this desire, this really urgent desire to truly disconnect her family. I think this is an urge that many of us who have our phones and computers nearby at all times can probably relate to, but really the feeling of What would our life be like if for a few days we were just away from all of that? What new connections, what might we discover? And May is so committed to that, unlike the rest of her family, and her commitment to that really creates some big problems in the story.
One of the things that struck me is throughout the story, even in the latter sections of the book, she's still feeling the effects of the surgery. Those continue throughout. So this is someone who is healing as these activities and extraordinary situations are taking place.
Yes, that's a beautiful way of putting it, actually. It's interesting to think that throughout the course of the whole novel, all of these things that are unfolding, her face is in a process of healing. And I do think that though there are many dystopian elements of the book, there is a story of healing that's taking place as well on multiple levels in the story.
And that was important for you to tell that, to want that aspect of healing.
Absolutely. As the world becomes more dystopic with increasing climate change and global conflict, it feels easier and easier to write dystopian fiction, which is something that I am very interested in doing. But I also felt a real desire and urge and even responsibility to try to have hints of a possible way forward that is not only tilting in that dystopian direction.
Without giving too much or anything away, that May does fall victim to going viral and mm-hmm. and to have actions that are taken to become very well publicized in the outside world. Again, something that we can certainly understand in our current world, yet with a bit of a twist.
May does end up coming under really vast scrutiny for something that happens. And I read John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, which was a really interesting look at that kind of experience for people.
What I was alluding to is the fact that it's so personal and it's such an attack. I mean, we feel that way now, but I was reading the novel thinking, oh God, it could get even worse, couldn't it?
I fear that it could, yes. So
yeah.
This is probably a cautionary tale, among other things.
Among other things. There does come a time where these hums, there has to be a relationship and a trust in technology, which I think would be hard for any of us, especially for May, who has lived through what she has lived through in this. Was that always in your mind that you wanted to have that dilemma present itself?
Yes, absolutely. And I would say that for me, the book is really about that vast gray area that we live in, because I try not to be a Luddite. I think that tech brings many incredible gifts and capacities to our lives. And I also think that there are real dangers that come with it. And the book is really trying to look at the double-edged sword of the many different technologies that are ever increasing around us.
So technologies, yes, but also with that, the climate change, global warming, what is happening to the planet that allows these technologies and also takes many things away from us that we're in the position that we're in because of it.
Yes. As I look ahead to the future and see both the progress in artificial intelligence and different technologies, as well as the ever-increasing impacts of climate change, those things do seem to me, this is the world that is being wrought before our eyes. And in the book, I am really trying to grapple with those possibilities.
Helen Phillips is our guest. The name of the new book is Hum, a Novel, and it is published by Simon & Schuster. Talk a little bit about the marriage between May and Jem and the status of that marriage in the novel and as it progresses.
Yes, at the beginning of the novel, she hopes to receive a text from Jem while she's in the surgery, but instead she receives a text and she hears it dinging and she thinks, oh, it's from him, he's checking in on me. But then it proves just to be a text marketing something to her. And in the early parts of the book, there's really this feeling that as much as she wants to connect with him and maybe he with her, they keep on missing each other, almost as though their technologies, their wombs, their phones are keeping them separated. And over the course of the book, they certainly have tensions. But I do intend that there's real moments later in the book where you see both of them genuinely trying to connect. And at the end of the book, there's a moment where Jim's phone dings in his pocket and he doesn't reach for it. Instead, he keeps his eyes focused on May. That might not seem like the height of romance, I agree. But I do think that there is something to be said for ignoring your phone, looking at the one you love, and really making that extra effort to connect and understand the other person.
The friendships that May has in the novel I found fascinating, too, because even though there may not be the understanding of what she has gone through when it comes to the surgery, there is a friendship and an understanding that this is someone who they love and respect and they're concerned about.
Yes, her connection with Nova was really important to me. I think it adds some warmth to the book. Nova also is someone who, unlike May, is not quite as caught up in nostalgia for the past, but is really taking on the world as it is in its current form and accepting it. And her strength and witnessing her strength really does mean a lot to May in the book.
I loved your depiction of the children because technology or not, bunnies or not, kids are kids, and they can be sweet and they can be brats.
Yes, that's true. Yes. For all of May's concern about her children and probably legitimate concern, they do throughout the book prove to be, as you say, children, to have a resilience, to have a flexibility, to be able to engage with nature and with technology. They have a flexibility that May herself lacks.
Are they better suited for the future?
Well, at one point in the book, Lou says to her mother, I feel sorry for you that you didn't have a bunny when you were a child. And May is taken aback by this, but Lou is really saying, you can't understand the world that we live in now. You know, I'm a mother, and I sometimes feel concerned. I often feel concerned about the world, but I do feel like it's certainly possible that my children are engaging with it in a different and better way than I am.
While the concept of May losing her job to AI is something that many of us are concerned about or talking about and looking at the future of AI, as you wrote this book, I mean, the jury's still out very much on AI, right? And so to come to terms with that and to write a book that is dystopian, but sort of look at where we are now and how we feel about this emerging technology.
It's interesting you should bring that up because I started working on the book in the fall of 2019. That's when I was doing a lot of my early research. That was before ChatGPT. There were earlier forms of it. So even in the time that it takes to write and publish a novel, there have been massive changes in that realm. And I do not have any clear answers or opinions on that front, but I do think that this question of what role artificial intelligence will play in our lives, even in our creative lives, is definitely not going anywhere. And it's something I think a lot about as a college professor at Brooklyn College. So I don't know, but I am watching this with great fascination and some trepidation.
And the fascination and trepidation, it seems, in the novel is brought as how it impacts families, of how it impacts individuals, but how it impacts a family unit, which is what I found so beautiful and so fascinating about the novel.
Yes, and I think that in a way that's, in my own life, it's very concrete, you know, what decisions you make around technology with your family, how you value connection, how you nurture connection, a word that I keep bringing up. But I am very interested in, yes, how these technologies and advances affect our most intimate day-to-day interactions in our homes.
And with that and the interactions and with the technology that takes place within the context of the novel, there is also a great simplicity, isn't there, to the lives of these characters?
Well, I think May wants their lives to be simple. You know, she is sort of hoping for she is seeking a more natural and grounded life, but I think she finds it elusive.
When you finish a story like this, how does it prepare you for what is to come next, to think ahead while still talking about this book?
Well, I already have in my mind, not on paper, a good sense of what my next book will be. And it will be taking some of these questions that are still really hot for me that I bring up in Hum to an even further extreme. So it is set in even a slightly more futuristic setting where people have to make even perhaps more dramatic decisions in order to connect with their families and help their families.
What do you make of the term dystopian?
It's a term that I definitely think of a lot. Again, as I said, as our world sometimes feels more and more that way, certainly during the pandemic with everyone wearing masks all the time, you suddenly find yourself in a surreal moment that is reality that you never could have imagined would happen. I find it a helpful term for describing certain kinds of fiction, but as I write dystopias, I want to temper them with something else.
And that something else for you seems to be the more personal and the more, something that is actually living and breathing.
Yes. Though there's a lot of tech in the book, I don't think it reads very much like a story about technology because so much of it is the grounded physical experience of being in bodies and being with your children.
Even with that said of your thoughts on dystopia and this being described as dystopian, it wouldn't seem to me, in certainly my reading of the novel, that I would label you to be a dystopian writer, that's not sort of what you're going after.
Yes, I think that I'm going for something that is more nuanced than that. And hopefully there are in the book little grains of, or not even little grains, of hope for possible ways to navigate this future.
The name of the new novel is Hum. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Helen Phillips, what a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Truly a pleasure.
Helen Phillips' new novel is Hum. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at WAMC.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.